Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Sharon Jackson. We want to welcome you to the International Mastermind Association Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host. Again, I shall say my name is Sharon Jackson, and I'm with the International Mastermind Group, Palm Beach Life Planners. We have all the planners on the line, Palm Beach Life Planners on the line, and they are energized and ready this Saturday morning to be on the air with all of you. So I invite you to call. I invite you to text and email a family member or friend and tell them that we are on the air right now, or that they can join us by internet by logging on to www.blogtalkradio.com/masterminders, or by telephone, and the number is 661-554-9219. If you want to communicate with us while we're talking, you can also join us on the chat room, or you can log on through your Facebook account. Make a comment on your Facebook account and let us know you're listening, and post your questions there as well. We will be monitoring the page while on the call. Today we will continue our discussion, the bestseller, Thinking Grow Rich, is Chapter 5 on Imagination. We also have our guest. We have an exciting guest this morning, Mr. Don Green. He is the executive director of the Napoleon Hill Foundation. We also, I believe, are going to have a guest. Who has a testimonial in the Think and Grow Rich book, Mr. Alan Kleinahan. He is a South African, and he will be calling today from London. So what I'd like to do is ask one of our Palm Beach Life Planners to, before we get started, we'd like all of our listeners to hear a little about the International Mastermind Association. Laura, are you all on call and ready? If not, I'll proceed and give you a little bit about Mastermind. Laura, when you come on, we will go ahead and I will let you take control. The International Mastermind Association, or IMA, is a group of like-minded individuals who come together on the mastermind concept espoused in the Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich. As masterminders, we commit to coming together as a group on a regular basis for coordination of knowledge and effort in a spirit of harmony between two or more people for the attainment of a definite purpose. We come together to share knowledge with one another, support each other in setting goals and achieving our goals, and hold one another accountable to what we commit to do ourselves. We set goals in 10 areas of our lives. It's important that we set goals because accountability is everything. The 10 areas of our lives are these: spiritual, family, health, financial, business, civic, personal, educational, recreational, and creativity. You must have a plan. And plans if you're going to succeed in any endeavor. It's your course. It is your plumb line. It is what you follow during life to succeed. Successful people have plans, while failures never plan. Napoleon Hill says, education, knowledge, and influence is more powerful than any exchange of money. For more information about IMA, International Mastermind Association, visit us on the web, www.internationalmasterminders.com. Our Facebook, International Mastermind Association. Follow us by liking our page. We want to say hi to the founder president of IMA, Miss Ann McNeil. Ann, are you on the line?
Good morning. Yes, good morning, Sharon, and welcome everyone to our International Mastermind Association Blog Talk Radio Show. And as Sharon has given you some information already about the organization, we want to thank Mr. Don Green, our first guest, and we also want to share with you his information relative to how to become a member of his foundation and be a part of the International Mastermind family and at the same time the Napoleon Hill family. And so I'd just like to use this opportunity to just thank you in advance, Mr. Green, for being willing to come on and share. And as we move through the show, we will also continue to share a little bit about how Napoleon Hill has changed all of our lives through the book, and we just really appreciate everything that you're doing, have done, and will do in the future to continue to promote the principles of Napoleon Hill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Alan Speaks, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Oh, very good. And we have both our guests on the line. I just wanted to make sure that you understood.
Oh, Alan, thank you. Thank you also. Okay, thank you.
Before we get started, if you all don't mind, I'd like to read a short bio on both Mr. Green and on Alan Speaks. I'm going to apologize right now. We didn't talk ahead of time, so I do not want to mess up your last name. So if you would, when I get to it, I'd appreciate it if you would correct me promptly. Don Green. Mr. Green is a resident of Wise, Virginia, the birthplace of Napoleon Hill. Don Green brings nearly 45 years of banking, finance, and entrepreneurship experience to his role as executive director of Napoleon Hill Foundation. His first youthful business venture was charging admission to see his pet bear, and we are talking a real pet bear. Since 2000, Green has traveled worldwide and used his finance skills to grow the foundation's funds in order to continue the foundation's educational outreach to prisons. Green has both modeled leadership skills as a CEO and taught them through the PMA Science of Success course at the University of Virginia's College at Wise. Don specializes in discussing his personal experiences in leadership and providing audiences with proven method of applying Dr. Hill's success philosophy to business. Alan?
Yes.
Is it Kleinhans?
Perfect. You pronounced it perfectly. I mean, it really depends on which part of the world you come from. They have... They have a challenge pronouncing my surname in England, and where I'm from, South Africa, which is where I'm originally from, we say Kleinhans, but I usually tell people to say, just like you said, it, Kleinhans, as there, because it just makes it easier for folks from across the water. So you've said it perfectly, Sharon.
Very good. Thank you. Well, Mr. Kleinhans is a highly entertaining and thoroughly effective professional speaker and peak performance coach. He is an expert in assisting and empowering people and organizations to create sustainable change. He specializes in peak performance training, coaching, and consulting for individuals, athletes, teams, and corporations. He's a successful facilitator, trainer, and NLP practitioner. Alan has been studying consciousness and the science of human behavior, peak performance, and success conditioning since 1988, an expert authority on the dynamics of human potential and self-esteem. Alan helps his clients create extraordinary results, both personally and professionally. He regularly facilitates public and corporate seminars and workshops on personal and emotional mastery and the psychology of heart-centered leadership. He has studied and worked with the biggest names in self-improvement. I'm not going to name them all, but we all know Anthony Robbins. We all know Zig Ziglar, Bob Proctor, Randy Gage, which is Anne McNeil's fave, and Robin Banks, Tom Hopkins, and a number of others. We are so thankful that both of these gentlemen
are the heart and soul of the Napoleon Hill Foundation and a person that has studied and wrote a testimonial on the book. So this is a very, very, very exciting call for each one of us, for the Palm Beach Life Planners. And so I just want to make sure that you all understand how thankful that we are that you have come on the call. Now, what I'd like to do, and I'd like to direct both of these questions, we'd like a lot of interchange between the two of you, if at all possible. But what I'd like to do to get this started is that Mr. Green and Mr. Kleinhans, both of you had your experience. Mr. Green was a finance person, and you had your own course of direction and experience. How did that lead to you to Napoleon Hill Foundation?
Okay, you're talking to me. I was in banking 38 years, and I was a bank president 18 years of that. While I was a bank president, and way before, I was a avid book reader, and I read all of Hill's material. I not only read his material, I read the material that he read. And I gave a speech one night to a local historical society, and on the way to the speech, I would listen to W. Clement Stone, who was chairman of the board. And I guess we're talking about using imagination. The next morning when I went into the bank, I handed a handwritten letter I wrote on a legal pad to Mr. Stone, to the foundation, and told him about myself and what I'd done. They invited me to Chicago and had dinner with Mr. Stone and the other board of trustees. Mr. Stone looked at me and said, "Boy, you know more about these books than I do." Said, "You ought to be a board member." And I said, "What do I got to do?" And so after serving as a board member, we only had one other trustee, and he was in bad health and getting up in years. They needed somebody another, and we had a chance to sell the bank, walk away with a few coins. And I said, "Yeah, I'll run the foundation, but I need to move it from Chicago to Wise." I said, "That's where Hill was born." So we're on campus of the University of Virginia, and we're starting our 13th year, so it's been great.
Wow, that's fantastic. Hello?
Yes. Alan, would you like to go on?
Yeah, sure. Don, may I call you Don?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, Don, that's a fascinating story. That's fantastic. I mean, I'm also a big fan of W. Clement Stone as well as Napoleon Hill. And I came to the book in a different method, but you know, my path started out, I was a young man growing up in South Africa, and, you know, I wasn't very academically minded. I didn't do too well at school, and I didn't get the marks to go to university. So I was drafted into the South African Defense Force and went to the army for 2 years. It was compulsory conscription at that time. And I had a very tough 2 years where I was moved around the country to various places and deployed. And the last 7 months of my 2 years, which was 1987, I spent 7 months in Angola and did a tour in Angola and lost a lot of friends. So it was a pretty tough time. It was when I came back to South Africa once I'd finished with the army, finished my 2 years and came home and tried to reintegrate into civilian life, that I bumped into a good friend of mine, and he gave me the book Think and Grow Rich to read. He was well aware of what I'd been through in Angola. While we were out there for 7 months, it was a very, very tough time. As I said, I lost a lot of friends, and I had to do some things that I wasn't too proud of as a soldier. And, you know, the nightmares started after I came home. And he gave me Think and Grow Rich to read, and he said, "You know, you need to read this book and then digest what it says, contemplate what it says, really think about what it's saying to you, and then, you know, start to monitor your thought processes, etc." He said, because, you know, everything starts with a thought. And at 21 years of age, you know, he was a very good friend. He was very emotionally mature for a 21-year-old, probably the most emotionally mature person I knew at that stage of my life. And I took the book away and I read it three times, cover to cover, and it made the biggest impact on my own personal psychology. And it really started to introduce me to the principles, you know, of success, especially, you know, when you talk about the chapter 5 that we're going to be discussing, which is imagination. You know, for the first time in my life, you know, I had education on, you know, what actually happens between the ears, you know, what goes on in our mind and how we think, etc. So, you know, when I say this book had a massive impact on my life, you know, I can't state that, you know, enough. You know, it just makes such a difference to my life. And That's when I read it in 1988, which was July of 1988. And since that day, you know, I've been talking to people about this book and telling them and recommending it to anybody who would listen. You know, and all my audiences, I tell them about this book because it's had such an impact on my life. I actually love this book, and you know, if you talk about anybody who's really been successful in life, they've probably read this book as well as your W. Kim and Stone's books. And you know, I just find what you said, Don, about your interaction with that organization is I find fascinating, because you know, W. Kim and Stone, when his company, it was as I understand it, was a rule that if you worked in his organization, you had to read a certain number of books. And one of those books was obviously Think and Grow Rich, and the other one was some of his own work, etc. So you know, I find that very fascinating.
You are fascinating. Both of you are. We want to thank you very, very much. You know, when you talk about imagination, and this is where we are in the book, it talks about two forms of imagination, synthetic imagination and creative imagination. We talk about synthetic imagination. It talks about the book. The book talks about taking things that you already have. Mr. Green has a lot of knowledge. He has a lot of finance knowledge. He has a lot of executive knowledge and a lot of administrative knowledge. And he can take that, and he can take it anywhere and formulate it and use that to administrate just about anything. It also talks about creative imagination. And that takes you to a different level. Can Mr. Green and Mr. Kleinhans, can you kind of talk to us about how you've used your imagination, Mr. to use your work and take it to a next level? Was I clear on my question?
Yes.
Yes, I understand. Al, you want to go first? You want me to?
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
please.
I don't mind. You can carry on, Don.
Okay. I didn't understand. You want me to go first?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Okay. Most all of imagination we do with it's probably one of my favorite topics. There's not a lot of books written on it. There was an Indian person, I can't pronounce the name, wrote one called Creative Visualization, and most of what Hill talks about and we see in everyday life is synthetic. It's simply taking something other and improving upon it, which we can every day. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a tool or anything out there, a lawnmower or whatever. If we improve on it, it's synthetic imagination. Now, creative imagination is something different. That's creating something that's not existed before. And I think probably, to me, the best example of all time was all of these patents that Edison got. Even the light bulb was an improvement on something that already existed. And the one example that didn't exist before, which is creative imagination, was a phonograph. Nothing had ever been produced that would allow you to reproduce sound. He simply took an envelope, drew out what he thought would put it together, and had the guys make the parts, put it together, and assemble it, and it worked the first time. And so that was creative imagination, taking something from inside his head and creating something other that never existed. But today, most of the stuff we take, where it's book publications or what have you, are simply improvements over things that exist. And if you can take something that already exists and make an improvement on something that somebody wants or needs, they will depart with their money and end up in your pocket if you can do that. And it's done every day.
Exciting information. Thank you so much. Mr. Clarence, would you like to follow up with that?
Yeah, sure. I agree with Don wholeheartedly there. You know, imagination is definitely not taught enough. And, you know, if you think back, if you go back to school, I think all of us will agree, you know, that at school what we do is we get taught in a particular fashion which actually dulls our imagination. You know, we're constantly told in classrooms, and I know, you know, kids get told all the time, even to this day, that, you know, stop daydreaming, you know. And, you know, dreaming is important because it's part of imagination. It's imagining something that hasn't yet happened. And, you know, if I think how this book sparked my imagination, and, you know, Don just mentioned the book Creative Visualization. That was written by Shakti Gawain. And that was a book that I also read very early on, and it tells about how to use your imagination to create things, you know, to dream about stuff that you haven't thought about yet. But, you know, at that particular time, once I read this book in 1988, you know, I'd just come out of the Army. I'd been out of the Army for 6 months. I was unemployed during that time because I had earned quite a bit of money in the Army, and I'd earned some danger pay from being in certain areas of Africa at that time. And so what I did was, you know, I came out of the Army, and I was in a very, very tough place psychologically. I was emotionally had been affected. I was had post-traumatic stress disorder, and I locked myself in my bedroom for about 6 months. And all I did was I drank myself into the bottom of a bottle because I didn't want to have nightmares about what I'd been through. And it was during that time that I read Think and Grow Rich. And what it did is it lifted me straight out of that, and it got me thinking about things I'd never thought about before, and it educated me on information that I'd never heard of before. So I began thinking about what I wanted to do with my future, you know, and how I could use what happened to me to go forward. And very, very soon after that, things began happening very, very quickly. And I began to imagine, and you know, he talks about in this chapter, you know, you've got to have a burning desire, and you've got to have a specific plan. So and I thought, well, what I wanted to do is I wanted to make some money. I wanted to make a lot of money, and I wanted to, you know, I wanted to work with people, and I wanted to use what I had experienced to, you know, first of all, to empower myself, and then to help other people, you know, to lift themselves out of challenging situations. And very, very soon after that, within the next sort of 3 to 6 months, you know, I found myself working in a job where I was getting paid more than my folks, actually, much to my mother's dismay. And, you know, I had a beautiful car, and then I moved into my own flat. And so, you know, what I learned in the chapter of chapter 5 of imagination, you know, creating something out of your mind that didn't yet exist, you know, it happened very, very soon to me, and the tangible effects started to show up in my life very, very much, very, very quickly. So I knew that this was this information was very, very powerful.
How exciting is that? Now, let me ask you this. That is how the book, Our Imagination, got you there. Can you each talk to us, and we're going to go to Mr. Green first and then go to Mr. Kleinhand second, but how you use imagination, practical use in your everyday? I mean, there are things that just you have to do by, you know, that have to be done. But, Mr. Green, you know where you want to take the foundation. How do you use your imagination to take the foundation where you want it to go? And Mr. Kleinhans, we'd like you to follow that up with where you want to take your business. All right? Am I clear?
Yes.
You are with me. Well, start off with we're a nonprofit foundation, and I absolutely love what I do. Of course, I've loved every job I had. And to me the imagination is like I got a book. I'm not promoting my book, but I got a book coming out with McGraw-Hill in April 5th. It's already on the web, so you can pre-order it. But I'm not promoting the book today. But anyway, I operated a zoo when I was in high school, and I'll tell you an instance. I would notice I only charged a quarter. But I made enough money when I was in high school. I loaned my oldest brother money to buy his first house. So I was my dad was a coal miner with a 7th grade education. We never had bathrooms in the house until I was 11th grade. I guess we was in poverty and didn't know it because we eat good. But anyway, at the little zoo I had, I had poison snakes, and then I had a bear, and I had monkeys and other animals as I got some extra cash I brought in. But I noticed I would get a lot of the same visitors over and over. And there were some of them that worked in the coal mines with my dad. And they would come and pay me a quarter, and they'd bring somebody with them. And one day it just dawned on me. I saw a guy been there several times. And I approached him, and I told him, I said, I noticed you come here and bring people. He said, oh, yeah, I got relatives living up north. They come in for vacation and so forth. And said, I like to bring them here. Said they like to buy little souvenirs, and I show them the snakes. I said, well, from now on, when you come in, you just stop here by where I'm at and tell me that you brought me some visitors. I'll let you show them around, and I won't charge you nothing. It made me money. That guy's in hog heaven. He's never been on stage, so to say. He's working in the coal mines. For him to be acting as a guide and showing 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people around and pointing out the snakes and the and so forth and all, the same people would bring me over and over all summer long. They would be bringing people into me. And, you know, I used my imagination. I thought, you know, this guy's helping me. you know, what can I do? And it was letting men free. He didn't have to pay the quarter, but also letting him take center stage and show people around, which relieved me of some bit because I could sell souvenirs and do the other things I needed to do. And I've always been that way. I've got stuff on my shelf back there that, well, Mr. Stone said he'd have to live to be 100 to get his work done, and he did. He lived to be 100. I'm in the same boat. About 3 years ago, I looked back there, and this is about when the economy was bad, and I thought, persistence. Think and Grow Rich had a tremendous story on persistence, and that was Darby's 3 Feet from Gold, except he quit, and somebody else picked up. And so I thought, well, I need to do a book on persistence. And if you've read the book 3 Feet from Gold, which made the bestseller list and is still selling well, I put together that book. I started the interviews. I interviewed quite a few of the people, and then I got Sharon Lecter, who did the Rich Dad Poor Dad, and Greg Greed to do the writing and so forth. Book belongs to us. It was taking too much of my time. They wanted to work with the foundation, and I gave them the opportunity. And I've got I'm referred to by people in the office as a crazy optimist, and some things don't always work out. But, hey, listen, it's not how many times you strike out. It's how many home runs you hit. And there's just unbelievable amount of stuff out there. Someone told me the other day, said, it's tough to sell books these days. I said, no, it's a great time to sell books. People need them more than ever. So, you know, it's just all how you look at it. Sharon Lecter and I was doing a book expo in New York City, and this was called Success University. It was professors. You could pay $1.99 or something other, and it was literally 1,000 people there. And one lady who identified herself as a professor at Dartmouth, I believe she said, and she said, we had the little sign up about positive mental attitude and the principles. She looked at me and she said, how can you be positive today? And I said, ma'am, I don't understand. She said, don't you know we've almost got 10% unemployment? I said, some people say we do. That means we've got 90% of people working. I'm concentrating on the 90% and hoping the other 10% sees the way. So, you know, it's just how we want to take something and do something other with it. And there's more opportunities today than there's ever been.
Very exciting. Now, excuse me, before we go on, you know I'm taking notes. So the question becomes, what is the name of your book again?
It's All I Learned About Success. What I learned about success, I learned from Napoleon Hill.
Well, we will be getting a lot of orders from today.
The original title was More Than a Millionaire. They wanted to change the name to put Napoleon Hill in it, so when people Googled, they would see it would pop up. It's McGraw Hill. It's a hardcover. It will be an e-book and an audio once the book is released, which is April 5th. They're doing pre-orders now, but I think it'll do well. It's 240 pages. I've been told over and over when I'm in Malaysia and Germany or everywhere I'm at, people saying, you ought to put that in a book, you ought to put that in a book. And I said, okay, I can make some money for the foundation because it'll belong to them. It'll go to project will be for scholarships at the University of Virginia.
Okay, very good. What I would like to do before we go on to Mr. Kleinahan, I'd like to release this time to Laura Greer, one of our Palm Beach Life Planners, to do a commercial. Laura, are you on the line?
Karen?
Yes,
I am. Okay, can you hear me?
Absolutely.
You're listening to IMA, and we're exploring the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on www.blogtalkradio.com/masterminders. You can listen to this and the other shows anytime on the web or join us live by calling into the show 661-554-9219. Again, 661-554-9219. If you want to communicate with us while we're talking, just press 1, or you can also join us in the chat room, or you can log on through your Facebook account.
Thank you very much, Laura. Now, I'd like to proceed on with Mr. Carnahan's. Would you like to follow up with Mr. Green's account?
Yeah, sure. The first thing I just want to say is I totally agree with Don when he says that, you know, we're living in a time now where there's just more opportunity than ever before. And it really depends on how you look at everything. It's so important. And it really comes back to this whole thing on imagination. You know, it just, you know, it comes back to what we said earlier about kids are not being taught the right kind of information at school. You know, school is a necessary thing, but unfortunately we're not teaching them the right things. And, you know, if I think about how I use my imagination, you know, to come back to your question on how I'm using imagination to move forward and you know, create more and take my business to where I want it to be. You know, imagination was something that, you know, we use accidentally as we're growing up until somebody actually teaches us what a powerful faculty it is. You know, if you take the book, Think and Grow Rich, and especially this chapter 5, you know, he talks about, in chapter 5, it says, you know, imagine the creative faculty of your mind is, you know, the ability to tap into vibration. It really depends on the amount that you're using it, you know, and we don't use it enough. And as Don said early on in this conversation, you know, there's not enough literature out there that teaches us how to use imagination, you know, creatively and effectively and practically. But, you know, what I've done is over the years, you know, since coming across this book and then reading many books afterwards on the similar subjects and on the subject of success, I've sat down for 5 minutes every single day in the morning and I visualize how I would like my day to go and how I would like my life to be. In other words, I create the ultimate picture, and in that picture I see my life as I would love it to be. And I just do that for, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 minutes a day, you know, and to do it, you know, people say, well, isn't, you know, 5 minutes doesn't seem like a long time, you know, is that effective? And I say, well, you know, if you do 5 minutes every single day and you times that by 365 days in a year, you know, you're doing, that's a lot of imagination, that's a lot of creative visualization that you're doing. You know, that's much better than doing it for an hour once a week or an hour every fortnight, you know, just 5 minutes a day. And in that 5 minutes, all I do is I create a picture in my mind, you know, of what I'd like my ideal day to look like. And then I fully associate to that picture. In other words, I smell what it's going to, you know, the smells, I see what I want to see, I hear the sounds I want to hear, you know, and, you know, in that picture, you know, it's bright, it's a beautiful picture, it really inspires me. And then, you know, what it does is it creates a great vibration in my body, because it's all about vibration. You know, chapter 5 also talks about thought vibration. You know, everything is thought vibration first. You know, everything we experience in this earth right now, all of us, you know, all the wonderful things we experience, you know, all the abilities that we have, you know, we can fly, you know, we can be in any destination on the planet within 24 hours. You know, that was first a thought. That was first creatively thought by somebody and who imagined that, you know, the possibility of flight. You know, when the Wright brothers, you know, came up with flying, you know, that was, you know, an idea that was preposterous to most people. You know, if you take Henry Ford when he came up with the idea of the motor car, you know, again, that was preposterous to most people, but he imagined something that wasn't yet there, and it was the creative visualization that made that happen. But it was actively and you know, effectively imagining that and creating that image in the mind over and over and over and breathing life into that image. Because only by doing that, you know, can you make something happen. You know, that's how you turn, you know, energy into matter. You've got to breathe life into it. It's got to be an obsession almost. And that's another word that comes up in chapter 5, you know, on imagination. It's got to be a desire, a strong obsession that makes something turn from an idea into something that is physical. And so that's how you do it. You know, you've got to use your imagination. And, you know, unfortunately, if you take most people, you know, as Don was saying just now, you know, most people are fixated on what's missing. You know, they talk about, you know, high unemployment rates. They talk about the current state of the economy and how tough things are, et cetera, and how they're battling to do this and battling to do that. And what they do is they're taking most of their internal images are formed by what they're watching. So they're watching TV on a regular basis. They're watching the news. They're reading papers. They're buying into the doom and gloom. So their creative faculty of their mind doesn't have a chance to work, and they don't feed the creative faculty of their mind, so they can't focus on anything else other than the news that they saw yesterday. And the news that they saw today is the same news they saw yesterday and the day before that. So in order to get past that, what you got to do is stop focusing on what's missing, and you got to start feeding your creative faculty of your mind. And if you do that 5 minutes every single day, just create an image in your mind about how you would love your life to be and how you would love your business to be and how you would love to see yourself and your family and profiting, et cetera, and, you know, prospering and moving forward and growing then you've got to feed that every single day. And it's only got to be a few minutes a day, creating something that, you know, is in the future, but by imagining it in your mind, what you're doing is you create an image of a forthcoming attraction. And if you feed that every single day and then breathe emotion into that and really make that alive in your mind, then what happens is you pull that forward. You literally pull the future into the present, and that's how you create something right now. And it happens very, very quickly. When you start doing that, you start picking up momentum. It starts happening very, very quickly, and before you know it, things are happening far, far quicker than you imagined. And before you know it, people are saying, "Wow, you know, things seem to be going so right for you. What are you doing?" And it's really just about using the creative faculty of your mind.
Very good. We have some people with their hands raised that would like to talk, but before I go to the callers, I'd like to ask one more question because I think I heard this in your last conversation. Are you saying that you'd use a dream board? In the book, it talks about a dream board, all the things that you dream about, putting it on, reading it, and looking at it for a few minutes every day, every time you need a pick-me-up to kind of stimulate your imagination.
Are you asking me, Sharon?
Yes, sir. And if Mr. Green has something to add to that, I obviously want to refer to Mr. Green also.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I mean, dream boards are fantastic. Yes, definitely, I use them, definitely. You know, if you come into my office, you'll see there's pictures all over the wall. There's photographs of beautiful places that I've been to with my family, you know, places like Hawaii, places like California, places like, Moscow, you know, where I've traveled around the world. You know, beautiful places where we've taken photographs, but also places that I would love to visit that I haven't yet visited. There's things that I haven't yet achieved and things that I haven't yet, attained that I would love to attain and love to achieve. I've got pictures of those things. Anything that stimulates my mind and put them on a dream board or put them on the wall in different places. And, you know, where dream board is so powerful, and a lot of people forget this or they've never been told to do this, but what I did was I took a photograph of myself and my family, and I put it right in the middle of all those pictures on my dream board so that every time that I look at my dream board, I can actually see myself in the middle of all of those things that I would love to achieve. And what that does is it allows my subconscious mind to take a picture of those things that I would love to achieve and things that inspire me, but also it takes a picture of myself and my family in amongst that, and that means that it associates me directly to those things. And a lot of people, when they create a dream board, they don't actually put a photo of themselves in the middle, and that's very, very important.
Okay, Alan, that was good. I've always used that, and I'll give you some examples. Back in 1975, I started a new bank, and I had seen there's a magazine called Better Homes and Gardens. You know, if you was here on the campus, I can take you and show you the little place I lived in. Second place I lived in. The first one was a little mobile home that cost $500. It didn't have a septic system. And then I went to an apartment for $30 a month, and it was a regular hell hole. But I took an ad from Better Homes and Garden. It was on the back page of this beautiful two-story cedar home, and I put it on it where I get my shaving stuff out every morning. I tacked it to the door, and when I was working at the bank, I had a chance to go to school, attend a seminar, Federal Reserve Bank in Richmond, Virginia. I'd written Olympic Paint Stains, and they told me that there was a house built from those plans in Richmond, Virginia, which is about 8 hours from me. Well, I didn't know when I'd be able to go to Richmond, but when I was at the bank, that I went to a seminar, and I remember the guy's name was Robert Black, was Federal Reserve Governor, spoke to us. That's been many, many years ago. And two things happened. One, he was a graduate of Stony Brook Graduate School of Banking. I figured I'm smart as he is. I ended up going there, which was at Rutgers University. But the other thing was, as I was leaving, I took my wife with me, and we'd have a little bitty camera. And I went by and looked that house up and took pictures of it. And they wanted $250 for the plans, which I couldn't really afford. But I kept their address, and then I got back, and I saved a little money, and I bought the plans, and I built the house. I still live in it today. And a couple of other things, and Alan will agree with this. You got to be careful what you wish with, or you'll end up with it. For example, I would not go out and buy a gold Rolex today because I think it's a waste of money, but I'm sitting here with one on because I pictured a gold Rolex, with me with a gold Rolex on my board. And, you know, to be able to go out and pay, I think the things are $30,000 a day. It's kind of crazy. So I did a black Mercedes, a big Mercedes on the wall, and I ended up with those things. So today I'd be a little bit more careful. I'd do things that would help mankind better because I don't need the money. I don't need the watches. I don't need the houses. I don't need the cars. I would visualize on how many scholarships I can create and so forth, and how many of these undeveloped countries I can get my book in. And I can tell you a story that's partly a little bit of my book. I think it's interesting. Alan's from Africa. This is a recent story. I had a guy from Africa, from Nigeria of all places, call me one day and want a phone number. And I'm sure Alan will agree. She said, "Don, someone in Nigeria wants your phone number." I said, "You know how much fraud we get on the internet?" I said, "Yeah, but maybe it's something I can help." I said, "Give him my cell number. If it gets me in trouble, I'll throw the phone away." So I'm out walking that evening. This guy calls and says, "Mr. Don," said, "this is Polly in Nigeria." I said, "How are you, Polly?" He goes on to tell me about reading your books, but he's given the foundation $250,000 as a result of reading our books. Now, the feeling that he thought that much of us to give the money is a good feeling, but the good feeling is to think that we influenced someone who was 13 years old and his mother could not afford 50 cents to take to school, and he is too embarrassed to go back to school. But he later read our books, and he is the largest distributor of malaria drugs in the world, and it made his money in pharmaceuticals. So there is so many of those stories to me that are so heartwarming, and not all of them involve that kind of money or involve money, but to think that we've affected people that simply took the books and done like Alan did, sit and read them, and then, as I tell people, get a pad and write down and says, "Where can I apply this? Where can I apply burning desire? What is my burning desire?" Most people are drifting. They don't have one. And believe me, without a burning desire, you're not going to be successful. You have to find something that you go to sleep with, that you wake up with, and you eat with. And if you can't be successful doing that, there's no hope for you.
Oh, how exciting were both of those comments. Thank you so much. We have a hand raised from Ms. Stephanie. Stephanie, last number is 087. Ms. Stephanie, are you ready?
Yes, hi. Good morning, Sharon. And thank you so much for this wonderful program. I'm listening to Mr. Don and Mr. Green speak, and I'm involved with kids, working with kids, and my question, either gentleman can answer. And I know Mr. Green had said about, you know, the school system and how they try to beat the imagination out of you by telling you not to daydream. And we've done a good job of that. But how do you get the kids back to that point of using their imagination to create a life for themselves? Because to invest in themselves, I'm not sure how to phrase the question, and I'm not sure if either gentleman understand what I'm trying to get at, but in terms of using their imagination or the book, or how do we get the kids back to dreaming again? What can we do?
Hey, Alan can throw his part on it, and I'll throw my part on it.
Okay.
Cool.
Thanks, Don. It's a great question, because, you know, kids are obviously very important. I've got two kids myself, and one is 10 and one is 8 at the end of this year. My eldest is a boy and my youngest is a girl. And, you know, there is some great literature out there for kids, actually. And, you know, Think and Grow Rich is probably a little, you know, if you're talking about young kids, you know, my age kids, you know, Think and Grow Rich might be a little bit too advanced for them at that sort of age. But there is a book out there called Mind Power for Children, and it's written by John Kehoe. And, you know, John Kehoe has also, you know, been teaching these principles on mind power and using your mind and creative visualization for the last 30 years. So he's also a great author. He's a good friend of mine. He does a lot of work in South Africa. And he's written a great book for children, Mind Power for Children. But there's lots of books out there that they can begin to read. I know that, you know, I've done a lot of talks at schools in and around South Africa, and I've worked with a lot of kids. And I recommend that they start reading very early on outside of the curriculum that they are learning at school. In other words, they start reading literature that is not included in their curriculum. In fact, you know, when I went to one of the schools that I was doing a prize giving at for the end of the year, I was very, very inspired to discover that a lot of the kids who were receiving prizes had actually requested certain books, you know, books by Donald Trump, books by Robert Kiyosaki, you know, even Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, was one of the prizes that had been requested by the individuals who knew that they were receiving a prize. They were actually offered the opportunity to choose their own prizes, and most of them had chosen books on success and wealth creation, which is a fantastic thing to know, because, you know, more and more kids are being, you know, they're becoming more and more interested in success, because obviously the TV has played a large role of that, and movies played a large role. But you can get kids interested in imagination very early on. It's not that difficult, because they still have a very, very active imagination. So, you know, obviously while they're at school, they're going to get told a lot that they shouldn't daydream and they should keep their head in the book, etc. And, you know, the linear education does actually, it dulls the imaginative process. But that's why this chapter 5 is such an important chapter in the Think and Grow Rich, because it talks about using your imagination actively. In other words, it's like a muscle, you know. In fact, he refers to it as a muscle, just like any muscle. If you go to the gym and you work out, then your muscles are going to be toned, you're going to be fit, you're going to feel healthy and strong. It's the same with the imagination. It is a muscle. If you don't use it on a regular basis, then it begins to lose its power. It never disappears, which is the good news. So even if you're an adult and you feel that you don't know how to imagine things, or you can't use your imagination, that's a lie. It's not true, because it just takes a little bit of practice. It never ever disappears, that faculty. It's always there. That's one of the blessings that we've been given, you know, is that we have this fantastic piece of machinery between our ears, that if we just start to use it, then we can get very, very good at it over time. And with kids, it's not that difficult. All you've got to do is you just got to, you know, keep them reading, you know, great books. You know, there's so many great books like Harry Potter and those kinds of books. What it does is it stimulates their imagination. It gets them thinking outside of the, you know, outside of the lines and outside of the box. It keeps them thinking. And, you know, never ever tell your children to stop daydreaming. You know, it's one thing that, I made a vow early on that I would never ever, you know, tell my kids that anything is impossible, or, you know, to get their head out of the clouds. You know, that's exactly where their head needs to be, because they need to be thinking crazy things in order to create amazing things, you know. So it's very important to keep stimulating that in children.
Alan, I agree with you. I've taught on a college level. I've taught our material 12 times. And, of course, my background is accounting and finance, and I've taught that also on a college level as a professor on the night courses. But I tell them you can memorize the work in school, and you can become an A student. You can use your imagination. You can become rich, and you can change the world. It's a lot more important that a child use her imagination and pursue their desires than it is to make straight A's. Straight A's simply means that you memorize what the teacher put out there in front of you, and you was able to recite it back to them. That doesn't mean. I sat with Mr. Stone, and he talked about that all the time. He talked about, he'd say things like, just do it. It's taking those dreams and making them goals and doing plans and developing them. And that we say the dreamers change the world, and it's so true. And how you do it with children is you get them to read the books, and you talk to them, and you convince them that they can make a difference. See, most of them don't see it. They see their Hill when he issued a statement, said both poverty and riches are products of the mind. And see, you know, that puts it all in a nutshell. It's all beginning in the mind, and we can concentrate on poverty, or we can concentrate on riches. And ever what we're thinking about, that's what leads us in a direction. And so, you know, the imagination is what separates us from animals. We don't have just instinct to survive. We can actually change things. We can make things better by use of our imagination.
Exactly.
Oh, gosh, that's great, great, great information. Thank you so much, gentlemen. We have a question from a caller, Ms. Rita. Last four numbers of the telephone are 2486. Rita, are you on the call?
Yes, thank you.
Would you like to ask your question?
Yes. First, I'd like to have the name of the gentleman's book so that I can try to obtain it.
Are you referring to Mr. Green or Mr. Kleinhardt?
Well, I came in on the last part, and it was...
Yeah, it must be Mr. Green, Sharon, because my book is not yet ready.
Because okay. I wrote down Mind Power for Children. I want to make sure that I obtained that one. But Mr. Green, could you give us the name of your book again?
Yes, All I Know About Success I Learned from Napoleon Hill.
Okay, All I Learned About Success
I learned from Napoleon Hill. You can pre-order it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's McGraw-Hill. I think I got I missed Alan. I would love to got his endorsement. I'll ask it the next time I've got a contract to do one on personal finance, which I've been after forever that I'm working on. But I probably had 20 more than that people said, I want to endorse your book, I want to read your book, and you'd be amazed at the people that endorse the book. It's in the business that I've run across some of the same people that Alan referred to. It's clearly stated in the book. It's mine, but it belongs to the foundation, and all the money will go to scholarships, University of Virginia. Don't mean to brag or anything, but don't need the money.
Okay. And listening to the other gentleman about the vision board, or he called it a dream board, I had one, and I need to find it because there are some things still on there that I'm trying to obtain. But how do you get away from dream killers? I mean, just don't...
Someone wrote one time, said that, I believe Mark Twain, said, don't walk away from negative people. Said, run from them. I think that's a pretty good bit because we as parents can be that if we're not careful. Because when the little kids start, I'll give you a good example I use in class. When kids are starting to walk, it takes two steps and falls, bumps its head. We say, oh, pretty baby, we help it up. It takes another step. But somewhere along the lines, they get a little bit bigger. We start warning them. We have to tell them about don't cross the street and stay away from people, strangers, and all this other stuff. But if and we are so negative when they was born, they never learned to walk because we know they're going to fall. They're going to skin themselves up. They're going to skin their knees and elbows, and they're going to bump their heads. But if we're as negative as they grew up as we are when they're first born, they never walk. So we got to be careful about it being a dream killers. See, Viktor Frankl wrote a book. I don't know where you've read it or not. It's Man's Search for Meaning. He was in Auschwitz in the Nazi prison camp for 3.5 years, and he survived. And he said he noticed when people had a why they want to do that was strong enough, then they would discover the how. So in the beginning, when we have those, Alan has his dream board, and I have mine, always have, that we don't let something another do it. I wore a suit for 38 years. I never took my coat off because when I started working, I really couldn't afford it. I found out Eastman Kodak was in town. The executives went to this Jew store, we called it, to get a custom-made suit. I couldn't afford one. But they had a sign up behind the cash register that said, if you're going to be a success, you must first dress the part. As I tell the kids in college, it might be cool to wear your pants where your butts are showing and so forth, but you send a bad signal because we don't dress for ourselves. We dress to make an impression on the people we're going to be with. But what I'm getting to is, Alan has his dream board. I had mine. But I also wrote the things down on 3x5 cards. I stuck them inside of my coat. So and they were the goals for each year. I still do it. Today I put them in my desk because I don't have to keep a coat on the office. But if I was at a red light or I would be waiting on a waiter or have a moment or something or taking a phone call, I would pull those cards out and I'd say, God, Don, you said you're going to put up a historical marker, Mr. Hill. What have you done on it? It would remind me and to not let something kill my dream. That means I've not accomplished nothing on it. And that was using it as an example. I wanted to put up a historical marker. When I wrote the letter, they said, we don't put up historical markers to individuals. Okay, I'm just supposed to forget it, okay? I knew some people in the political circles, and I started writing letters, and I started making phone calls. And I finally got a hold of a guy up in the eastern part of the state, and he said, man, you're trying to honor Napoleon Hill? I said, yeah, I'm trying. I've not had a lot of luck. I'm wanting to put up a historical marker. He's much more important than a lot of people I've seen, the battle of so-and-so and so-and-so. And he said, stop what you're doing. He said, I read that book. He said, I can handle it from here on. And then he came back to me and proved what I had. He says, it cost over $1,000. It's not in the budget. I said, no big deal. Where do I send a check? But I kept that on a 3x5 card till I got it done. And, you know, and I still do it today. And, for example, in 2012, I had Get Don's book published. Well, I never got it done. I got the contract. I got the advance. And they tell me it won't come out till April the 5th in 2013. I don't feel like I failed or anything. I just wasn't able to accomplish it on a timetable that I wanted. But it wasn't a failure, but I didn't quit. And I think that can avoid the dream killings if you do take the dream board that Alan's talked about and I talked about, but also put it, little mementos around you where you're at. I got one on my car and one on my phone. It says, if it is to be, it is up to me, which simply means is if things ain't going well, Don, do something other about it. Don't sit and wait for them to come and get you off the sofa and do something other. You know, do it, originate it. Create it yourself if things are not going right. And daily reminders.
Yeah, that's fantastic, Don. Can I just add something to that about to answer the lady's question on dream stealers and dream killers? They usually come in the form of other people, and those people are often very close to us and often in our own families, actually, or very close friends. You know, when somebody gets a new goal or a new dream or they're inspired by a new desire, you know, often the closest people to them can kill that dream. And, you know, I had this very, very similar experience where, you know, I for a long time I wanted to achieve something in my life. I wanted to create something, and I was going in the wrong direction. I was hanging around with the wrong people. I was still studying, you know, I've been studying this information, you know, as Sharon said early on when she introduced me, since 1988. But quite a few years later, I found myself, you know, hanging around with a group of friends that I had grown up with, and we had grown up together. I'd known them a very, very long time. And, they were my closest friends, but they wanted something different to me. You know, I wanted to create something. I wanted to be successful. I wanted to leave my mark on the earth. And I wanted to go off in a direction where I was, you know, would become a speaker, and I would, train people in this kind of information and assist people to create success in their life. And I wasn't getting any closer to my objective, you know, hanging around with a certain group of people. So, as tough as it was, you know, I decided that I was going to remove myself from that environment because it wasn't going to serve me in moving forward towards my dream. And it was a very, very tough decision to make because these were the closest friends I had. And you know, we had grown up for a number of years together, you know, in South Africa and now also abroad. You know, a lot of us had moved abroad together. But I made the decision and I thought, well, you know, I'm always going to have those friendships. But in the meantime, if I remove myself from this environment, it's going to be the best thing for me to do in order to move forward. And I did. And I told them, I actually sat down with a group of them and I said, listen, guys, you're not going to see me for a little while because there's something I need to do for my life. And, you know, please don't contact me, you know, don't come and visit me. You know, I need to get this stuff done and I'm only going to get it done if I remove myself from this environment because it was a toxic environment. And I removed myself from that environment for 13 months and it was the best decision I ever made. You know, and sometimes those dream stealers are even family members, you know, and it's just simply a case. You know, if you find often you can't remove yourself from a family environment because it's, you know, you just sometimes you can't do that. But you can reframe what people are saying. And, you know, in your own mind, when somebody says something negative to you, I've always said in my own mind, okay, well, that doesn't have to have an impact on me. That's just their opinion. And I don't have to make it mean something that undermines me, or I don't have to let it be disempowering to me. You know, that's just their opinion. But that's something very important to be aware of because people are surrounded by dream stealers and dream killers, and that's why a lot of people's dreams never come to fruition because they let the people closest to them, even their own family members.
Excuse me. We're getting ready to, the show is getting ready to end, but I'd like to ask a favor. I'd like to ask if we could extend the show for another 15 or 20 minutes to allow us to do a commercial and allow us to come back and do final comments. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure, no problem.
It's okay with me.
Okay, thank you. Stephanie, will you extend the call, extend the line, please? And Laura, would you do the commercial? Thank you, Laura.
Yes, I can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. You're listening to IMA, and we're exploring the book, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on www.blogtalkradio.com/masterminders. For more information about International Masterminders, visit us on the web, www.internationalmasterminders.com, or on Facebook, International Master of Mind Association. Follow us by liking our page. The name of the book again is Think and Grow Rich, the original version, restored and revised by Napoleon Hill. The ISBN number is 1.59330.200.2. Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you, Laura. Teresa, if you were on the line, I'd appreciate it if you would give a shout-out regarding our annual meeting in January. Teresa Dennis?
I'll take a moment to thank Mr. Green and Mr. Kleinhand for joining us, for sharing in such wonderful information. And 2013, January the 11th and the 12th, we will be celebrating our IMA annual meeting. Our attendees will be sharing their accomplishments, sharing their goals, the things that they have accomplished for the year 2012. Our theme for the year is a year of personal development and growth, and we're inviting all of our listeners to attend. You can register on our membership website. It is international-masterminders.membership.org. Again, that's international-masterminders.wildapricot.org. I think I gave it to you incorrectly at first. international-masterminders.wildapricot.org. WildApricot.org. And again, gentlemen, thank you so very much. Back to you, Sharon.
Thank you, Narika. You're very good. Again, we want to thank both of you gentlemen for being on with us, and we want to make sure that we have extended the call for another 27 minutes. So we'd like to, for both of you to wrap up, you have up to 15 minutes to talk to, well, we say up to 15 minutes, but up to 10 minutes to talk to us about the final thoughts that you would like to make sure that we get. We have just finished our mid-year and are going into our annual meeting. And in our annual, as Teresa has mentioned, we talk about what we achieved this year, and we talk about where we're going. We talk about our accountability, our goals, our objectives, and what our dreams are. You've given us extremely good information, but what would you like for us to know as your final thoughts?
Don, you can go first, my friend, as I just spoke just now.
Well, to me is, I remember what Ben Sweetland said. He said success was a journey and not a destination. So, you know, if we got a goal that when I got $1 million in the bank, I'm successful. No, we're never at the end of the road. As long as we're breathing, we can do something. We can encourage a child. I can tell you story after story after story, which we don't have time for. But if we simply can do nothing more to accept, pat a kid on the back and say, kid, I know it's rough, but you hang in there. You're going to make it. You know, live your dream. Just say something that can encourage them. Hill said when he was working around outside of the mines, he said an old miner put his hand on his back and said, boy, said, you're bright. Said, if you got you an education, you'd go places. He said he remembered that every single day of his life. So sometimes, you know, we might not be in a position to give them books, to mentor to them, or provide scholarships or whatever. But from the good book is we can always encourage it. And Alan gave you some great points. I thought he was talking about me when he said, like, people would tell you, I was young and in banking, and I'm doing these deals. You know, I'm doing land to Walmart, and I'm doing these land deals, and I'm making money, and I'm banking. And I was told even by my dear mother, says, don't get above your raisin now. And I mean, what in the world does that mean? You know, it means I got to go back and grow up without a bathroom and a house. You know, they mean well, but you got to be careful because people don't want you to outgrow them, even your own family. You know, so you'll find yourself with some new friends. That don't mean that you don't love the old ones, but you'll develop new friends, and you'll become a part of the people you associate with. All the literature is basically psychology. It's study of the human mind and the application of it. So we become a part of our surroundings, either good or bad. I won't mention the guy's name, but you all know a famous sports figure had a contract for $100 million, and he gets in trouble. And I heard a psychologist say he went back to his old neighborhood, got in some illegal activity, and his so-called friends turned against him. He did his job on the football field, but he didn't make new friends. He was a changed person on the outside with the Ferrari and all the other things, but inside he had not changed. So he went back to his old neighborhood to be with his friends. He didn't want to outgrow them. So he went back, and they got into things. And then who turns on him? His so-called friends, and he gets a prison sentence out of it. And I'm rooting for him today. But we got to be careful about that. There's not anything wrong with attracting. You know, we all read this book, A Secret, which is about the law of attraction. Hill wrote about that in 1919. You know, we attract like things. You know, Alan can't sit there and begrudge some people for making money and expect that for him to be good. We attract what we attract, or we repel. You can't have hard feelings, jealousy, and greed of someone else that's been successful, but sit there and say, Lord, would you make me successful, but don't make Alan successful. It doesn't work that way. You know, it's sowing and reaping. You know, we get what we send out, either good or bad. But I think we have a wonderful chance to get the message across. And if I could talk for a week, I could tell you the influence in Africa, Estonia, Belarus, Russia, China, and my last dream is Iran. I've done Afghanistan. I'm in Afghanistan. I'm in Israel. And our material has been taught in Iranian universities, not with our permission, which I don't care. But I would like for everyone out there to realize what Alan's talked about, what I've talked about is, see, most of us grow up thinking that if I get something other, I got to figure out how am I going to get it, how am I going to get it from you, how am I going to get it from Alan. They don't understand creativity. It was real easy for me being in the bank. I used an example at the University of Virginia. I told them as a bank president, If Alan has a good idea and comes in there and says, Don, I got this idea here. I want to open up bookstores. I want to do a coffee shop. I want to do this. I want to do that. And if I had belief in Alan's story and he convinces me what he's doing, I would say, okay, you need $10,000. I would fill out a little bit of paper and he'd sign it, and I would get my secretary to take it. And she would bring back, she'd bring me back a cashier's check to Alan for $10,000, or if he's got a checking account, a little deposit slip. At that moment, Alan and I, we created $10,000 that never existed before. You talk about magic. We created wealth that never existed before. Now, Alan's got an obligation to go out there and make that coffee shop go. But here's the good thing about it is, there's no limit on how much we can create. There's no limit on how big the creation is. It could well be $100,000 or $1 million, or he can do it over and over again as long as he can demonstrate that he makes proper use of it and he pays back the obligation. But we didn't have to steal the money. We didn't have to take it from someone. We didn't have to pull tricks. We sat there in a few minutes' time, we created wealth. And we can create wealth, and we can keep on creating wealth if we use our imagination.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Alan, before we go on to you, Ann McNeil has a question. If you don't mind, I'd like to be able to open her mic and let her ask her question, please.
Of course.
Ann, go on. Ann McNeil, your mic is open.
Thank you, Sharon. My question was regarding the mastermind group concept, and if either of the guests had any thoughts on how to mastermind, and if they've been in a mastermind group, or are they currently in a mastermind group?
Yeah, I mean, the mastermind group, the mastermind concept is a very, very clever one. It's very, very smart, and obviously Napoleon Hill talks about the importance of having a mastermind. And you know, I've been in a number of masterminds over the years, and I do have a group of people, a group of peers. Some of them are speakers, some are trainers, and some are business people that I regularly meet with and regularly bounce ideas off. So it's definitely important to have that. And obviously the whole idea behind the mastermind is that if you have a group of people who are have great desire to achieve more success and make a bigger impact in their own life and for the greater good, and you tap into that group of minds, then that group of minds will obviously makes it much easier to tap into the super conscious or the infinite intelligence that Napoleon Hill talks about in the book. And it just gives, you know, more of a direct access or direct route to the cosmic energy, you know, so you can draw down on greater ideas, etc. But it's definitely more important, or it's very important, should I say, to have more than one mind working on specific ideas, not only in your own life, but as a group of people. Because when you can get the benefit and the input of certain minds of other people who are also very, very success-orientated and driven people, then it makes a big difference for yourself, because then they can offer you feedback and they can offer their perspective on your own goals and what you would like to achieve, etc., and give you different ideas that maybe you couldn't have come up with yourself. You know, Napoleon Hill talks about also, you know, having a mastermind, and you don't need to necessarily have a mastermind with people who are alive. You know, he talks about having a mastermind with people who have already passed on, you know, and I know people, friends of mine, and I've done it myself when I've imagined, you know, having certain members, certain influential people who have walked this earth, who are not yet, no longer of this earth, who have passed on, you know, have died. And I've had them around a table, an imaginary table, and imagined what kind of influence or what kind of perspective or what they would say about what my plans would be.
Thank you, Alan. We have extended the show. We have 18 minutes left, and we have two more callers that have questions. If you don't mind, we'd like to get Rita has another question. And then after Rita, we have a caller that the last numbers are 0019. So if you don't mind, gentlemen, we have two more callers that have questions. Rita, would you like to ask your question?
Yes. Actually, it's not a question. It was just a quick comment. I wanted to thank you, gentlemen, because a few years ago, I'd say 2006 to 2008, I went through a divorce, ended up not being able to keep my home, foreclosed, and just fell on my luck. But I'm turning it all back around. Like I said, I'm going to definitely pull out my board again, and you know, the places that I'm trying to go now, because I'm working but I'm not in the same field so I'm not making as much money, and you know, I'm just trying to stay focused. And I just wanted to let you know that I greatly appreciate it, because when I was talking about dream killers, everyone's like, well, you can't get a house there on the salary that you're making. And you know, I just know where I want to be, and I appreciate you guys for putting me back into focus.
Thank you, Rita.
You're welcome. We now
have about 15 minutes. We'd like for you to respond, and then we'd like to go to the caller that with a number of 0091, but thank you for responding to Rita's question. Either gentleman.
Don, do you want to say something? I mean, I'm not sure if Rita had a question. She was just, it was more just gratitude on what we're speaking about. But yeah, I'd like to say, Rita, one thing I'd like to say is, you know, don't worry about pulling out your old dream board. Just create a brand new one. You know what I mean? Create a brand new one, because you've probably got new ideas and new goals and new desires.
Okay. That's great.
Yeah, I think it's important that. And what she's talking about is that so many times that we don't see the how, and you know, the main thing is get started. And we're told that over and over again. Is it's kind of like a vacation. It's you know, you're going to California, you don't have to know all the turns. I love what Martin Luther King said. Was he said, if you're climbing the stairs, you don't have to see the last step. You just have to see the first one. and you know, and you keep moving on. So it's not the thing that really matters, that you're going in the right direction. You take one step at a time, but you can't let fear stop you. And that it mobilizes people and prevents them moving. They get to first base, and they start thinking that I'll get thrown out. You know, I'll never make it, and on and on and on. So they talk herself out of taking the next step. They're saying to my friends will think I'm crazy. I'm going to fail. I'm going to fall on my butt. So what do? They take their path of least resistance, and they don't do nothing. We can't have success unless we are willing to risk failing. And we've not failed as long as we're trying, as long as we keep moving.
Very true.
Very good. It looks like our other questioner, our other caller, has dropped off the line, and we now have about 14 minutes left. So, you know what? I'm sorry. I cut Alan off before he was able to make his final comments. Would you like to proceed with your final comments now?
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much, Sharon. Appreciate that. And just before I forget, and just before I give my final thoughts and wrap up, I just wanted to say, Don, before we get off this call, Don, I'd love to swap details with you. I'd love to stay in touch, if that's possible, Don. And maybe we can sort that out at the end of the call. My final thoughts are, you know, just, you know, we've covered a lot of information today, and I just want to say, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me onto the call, Sharon. It's been a real pleasure hearing Don speak, and it's a real pleasure to answer the questions and to obviously to get involved in this call. So I really just want to thank you very much for inviting me on. And, you know, if we just, you know, what I'd like to say is, you know, this book, if you think about Think and Grow Rich, you know, the underlying premise that runs through this book right from the very beginning, what the book is all about is that whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve. So, you know, really everything starts with a thought, you know. It's just everything is thought impulse first. So, you know, everything starts with a thought, and it's all about vibration. So, you know, we're living in some challenging times, you know, and people go in and out of challenges. We just heard about a lady talk about the fact that she had some severe challenges a few years back. You know, I've had some severe challenges, some business-wise, some really tough challenges. And, you know, but, you know, when you study this information, it doesn't mean that your life is going to become rosy and it's going to remain rosy for the rest of your life. What it does is it gives you tools and ideas and practical ways of addressing life and of facing your challenges. And, you know, when you remember, you know, everything happens for a reason. There are no accidents in life, you know. And everything that you're going through, you know, myself included, you know, whenever I'm going through some challenges, I've always got to remind myself that I'm the person who created those challenges and I'm the only person who can come up with the solutions. You know, it's very easy sometimes when we find ourselves between a rock and a hard place to point fingers and to find reasons and to look to appoint blame in other areas and not to look at ourselves. But really, everything comes down to how we think and what we attract. And it all starts with our thoughts. And, you know, an important thing to remember about thoughts is that thoughts are real forces. And, you know, it talks about the mind in Chapter 5. You know, Napoleon Hill references the mind, and he says that the mind is a constant broadcasting center. It's constantly broadcasting thoughts. It's constantly receiving and attracting thoughts. So it's constantly sending and receiving thoughts. And if you think about it like that and you think, well, thoughts are real forces. You know, if I don't like what's showing up in my life, then I really need to look at what I'm attracting. And if I'm attracting certain things in my life, I really need to look at what I'm thinking about on a constant basis. And it's about monitoring your thoughts. And the goal, the whole idea is to become conscious. You know, consciousness is very important because what it does is it allows us to be conscious of what we're thinking about day to day. And that is a very difficult thing to do because from the moment you wake up, you've got to be conscious. You know, you're consciously brushing your teeth. You know, you're consciously eating your breakfast. And you're consciously planning your day ahead. You consciously arrive at your office. You consciously go through your relationships throughout the day. You know, it's about being conscious. You know, how do you show up in those relationships? How do you show up in your office? How do you show up in your business? You know, if you can be conscious about what you're thinking about and then start attracting at a higher level, what happens is you'll start to vibrate at a higher level and you start to attract things in line with that vibration. And that's what people say, is that there's nothing breeds success like success. And it's about getting into that momentum, getting into that flow. Now, that can be tough in the current economy because you've got people who are surrounding you and saying, oh, well, don't be such an optimist and stop, you know, living with your head in the clouds, you know, face reality. Can't you see the reality of this earth right now? You know, people are killing each other left, right, and center. You know, the economy is down. The euro is suffering, you know. You know, get your head out of the clouds. But you've got to be an eternal optimist. You've got to shut all of that out. and you've got to focus on what you think and not what anyone else thinks. Everybody's got their opinion, and you can't allow yourself the luxury of one negative thought, because if you do, you can very quickly get into a negative downward spiral, and that's happened to me in my life too. In spite of all the stuff that I've studied, I've got into one of those situations before, and I started to make a couple of bad decisions, and before I knew it, I was in a downward spiral, and very quickly I had to say, hey, come on now, I need to turn this around. And then, you know, it's a case of being able to be accountable for that, and then you can be accountable for everything. You can start to turn anything around. So wherever you are right now, I would like to say this to you, you know, remember, thoughts are powerful forces. They are real. And if you can start to monitor your thoughts day to day and start to become more and more conscious of what you're thinking about day to day, then you can start to choose your own thoughts. The great thing about the mind is that although it's broadcasting and receiving thoughts consistently 24 hours a day, even when you're sleeping, you also have the power to insert any thought of any type into your mind. So if you don't like what you're thinking about, then change it and say, what would I like to think about now? What would I rather think about now? What would I love to focus on right now? And then focus on what makes you feel good and keep practicing that day in, day out. Catch yourself. Whenever you catch yourself thinking about something negative or thinking about something not working out, stop yourself in your tracks and say, what would I rather focus on now? Something that makes me feel good. And then focus on something. Even if it's nothing that you have right now, just imagine what it would be like to be successful and rich and free. Imagine what it would be like to be a powerful role model. And then contemplate that and really create that image in your mind and keep practicing that. And what you'll see is you'll start to see results showing up in your life, and you'll start to see things turning around very quickly. And that's what I'd like to say as a wrap-up.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I appreciate your time, Mr. Green, and I thank you for your time. And we hope that we hear from both of you again, hopefully personally, professionally, and we see you at one of our annual meetings.
I'd love to pop in there, Sharon, next year.
Thank you. Thank you. What I'd like to do for these last few minutes, I'd like to do a couple of things. We need to do a wrap-up commercial, and we have Laura Greer that's going to do a commercial. And if at all possible, we'd like to do one more reminder about our annual meeting in January. Laura, are you ready?
Yes, Sharon. Thank you. You've been listening to IMA, International Mastermind, and we are exploring the book, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. We're here every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. at www.blogtalkradio.com. Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Again, I'd like to thank both Mr. Don Green, the Executive Director of the Napoleon Hill Foundation, for such an in-depth, exciting conversation. I really, really, really hope that we hear from you again. And I'd also like to thank Mr. Alan Kleinhan, calling in, Skyping in from London. We want to thank you, and this is one of the reasons why it's so exciting to use the Blog Talk Internet show, is that we have had callers from Switzerland, now we've had callers from London, and we have callers from the United across the country. So this is very exciting. It's been an extremely exciting call, and I want to thank you, both of you gentlemen, and I hope that we can have you both on again. I'd like to thank all of our callers, those that actually raised their hand and made a comment, and those that listened into the entire show. Again, this is Sharon Jackson and the Palm Beach Life Planners that will be on each Saturday morning during the month of September, talking about walking you through Think and Grow Rich. I don't believe that we have exhausted the imagination, but we will see you next week on Blog. Thank you, gentlemen.
Sharon, before you go, again, thank you very much for having me, but also would it be possible just to give my details to Don and ask Don to send me an email so that I can have his details?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Don. Nice talking with you, and I hope to cross paths with you sometime soon.
Yeah, it was a good day for me, Alan, just to get to talk to those folks who's listening and to get to meet you. And I'm sure our paths will cross before long.
Excellent. I look forward to it. You take care. Stay blessed.
Thank you.
Cheers now.